Has the Federal Reserve really turned dovish? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. When America's central banker speaks, markets pay attention. The Dow jumped more than 600 points yesterday after Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell hinted we might be done soon with hikes in interest rates. In a speech, he said rates are, quote, just below the Fed's target. The target is called the neutral rate, which doesn't pump the brakes or speed up the economy. Some analysts compared those words just below to what he said last month, that we are, quote, a long way from neutral. Diane Swonk was listening closely yesterday. She's chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
So there he was at the Economic Club just down the street, and the market really took notice. But what do you make of Chairman Powell's presentation?
Well, I think Jerome Powell is getting his sea legs. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, the comments he made in October that got financial markets very concerned about how high are interest rates going to go, those were unscripted remarks. He walked that back a bit in his comments yesterday that were scripted. I think what he was really doing is reflecting the consensus at the Fed is we're not exactly sure how high we're going to go on interest rates, and some things are changing, and we want our options open to respond to economic conditions as they shift.
So to market participants who heard that statement yesterday as we're not going to raise interest rates again after December, you'd say slow down?
I'd say slow down. This is a Federal Reserve chairman who is reacting to the data. He doesn't want to get ahead of himself.
Now, President Trump has been harshing on Chairman Powell recently. Some people read yesterday's statement as a capitulation to the president, getting all dovish.
Oh, absolutely not. This is not how the Federal Reserve works. And it really is people lumping in Washington all together. There's the political side of Washington and there's the Federal Reserve. They disagree on a lot and they debate a lot, but it's on the substance of the decisions they're making, knowing that they're making decisions, unlike the rest of Washington, that affect the overall economy. They really think about this very hard and they don't cave to political pressures the same way that we see in Congress.
Many a Thursday, we talked to Diane Swonk. She's the chief economist at the tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton. Diane, thanks.
Thank you.
The big meeting of the leaders of the biggest economies, the Group of 20, is set for this weekend in Argentina. Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping of China will meet to discuss, among other things, the trade war. Marketplace's Erica Barris is watching this. Erica, if a truce might somehow get declared, what might it look like?
Might be a delay of some new tariffs for several months while the two countries work out some divisive issues. Right now, the Trump administration plans to raise existing tariffs on $250 billion worth of Chinese goods to 25% from 10% on January 1st.
And the administration has also threatened to impose tariffs on the rest of China's imports. That would be on goods worth billions more, right?
Right. And those would be tariffs on things like phones and laptops. After General Motors announced layoffs this week, thousands of them, Trump threatened new tariffs on Chinese car imports, pointing to a 25% duty on pickup trucks and commercial vans for markets outside North America.
And we're seeing some specifics from another White House official of what these could look like.
Yep. U.S. Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer said yesterday, just a few days before this meeting, he was looking at options of raising U.S. tariffs on Chinese vehicles from 27% to 40%. That would match the tax Beijing currently puts on U.S.-made cars.
Erica, thank you. President Trump over Twitter this morning said again that tariffs pour money into U.S. coffers. Now, if the suggestion here is that foreign money is making the U.S. richer, that's wrong. U.S. businesses and consumers pay the tariffs. Marketplace goes beyond day-to-day business reporting to cover the big picture of the economy. We provide context and depth to connect the news to decisions that we all have to make, and we work very hard every day to ensure that our journalism is accurate and worthy of your trust. We don't do this work alone. We're counting on you to help. Become a Marketplace investor today in whatever amount you choose, and your donation will go twice as far thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate today at marketplace.org. There are 14,000 Starbucks in seemingly every nook and cranny of America. In Washington, D.C., there's a new one with an important difference. From WAMU in Washington, Michaela Lefrak reports.
This Starbucks in Northeast Washington, D.C. is much quieter than a typical location. There's no music playing. And if you look around, you'll notice the baristas are all communicating in American Sign Language. And there are other special features.
We have a TV screen So you know when your order is ready, your name is going to appear. The cash register is lower so that you can make eye contact and see people's hands.
That's store manager Matthew Gilsbach. He says 19 of the 25 people employed at this Starbucks are deaf. He is too. The voice you heard is his interpreter. All the employees at this Starbucks know American Sign Language. Many in this Washington, D.C. neighborhood are part of the community around Gallaudet University, the country's only liberal arts college for the deaf. There are about 7,000 deaf and hard of hearing people in the city. Gayla Guinard says the signing Starbucks makes sense here, and it's good business.
To my knowledge, this is the first time we've seen a major brand with stores in all kinds of locations actually create something that's for a specific group.
Guinard is the chief strategy officer at the Alexander Graham Bell Association for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Hearing customers regularly come into this Starbucks, too, and ask to learn how to sign their names or sign their favorite coffee orders. Here's Guinard.
Just because a person is not deaf or not hard of hearing doesn't mean they wouldn't go to that store. It's really important to have diversity in the marketplace.
In this neighborhood, other businesses also keep areas well lit so patrons can see enough to sign and lip read. Other shops have pens and paper handy so customers can write down their orders. The only other signing Starbucks in the world is in Malaysia. It opened 2 years ago. Right now in Washington, D.C., Gilsbach says he's enjoying teaching customers how to sign their favorite seasonal drink order. Pumpkin spice latte, of course. I'm Michaela Lefrak for Marketplace.
Now, Michaela grabbed some video of that American Sign Language in action. Go to our Twitter feed to see it, at Marketplace on Twitter. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.